Anchor FM, you're listening to Straight Roots Radio. I'm Hannah Francis. This project is a collaboration between X-Ray FM, KBOO Radio, and local publication Straight Roots. Straight Roots is a nonprofit organization in Portland, Oregon that creates income opportunities for people experiencing homelessness and poverty by producing a newspaper and other media that are catalysts for individual and social change. Today, we have an interview with Straight Roots investigative reporter Henry Brannon, here to talk to me about his latest article, Hustling in the Haze. Hundreds of thousands of Oregonians can't follow public health officials' wildfire smoke advice. What do they do? Hi, Henry. Thanks so much for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is currently the end of August, and we are in Oregon's fire season. Will you tell me a little bit about what the smoke status has been like in Oregon for the last month or so?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, obviously, people in the Portland area are super aware that we were, you know, just absolutely swallowed by smoke in early August. But aside from that, you know, there's still actually quite a few fires blazing throughout the state. And so folks, especially east of the Cascades, are still really dealing with the impacts of smoke. So yeah, it's been bad, and that's really how this year's smoke season's been so far.
So, will you tell me what some of the health impacts of smoke like this actually are?
When the Willamette Valley got kind of swallowed in smoke earlier this year, I think Multnomah County, they released something that I think was pretty helpful. And so they basically say particles in wildfire smoke can cause, quote, serious respiratory and circulatory issues, including asthma, cancer, stroke, and lung and heart disease. And so that's from the Multnomah County Health Department. So basically, I mean, in wildfire smoke, you've got this stuff called PM 2.5. And so that's basically just extremely, extremely small particles. And really the key problem with them, and I should say these are caused by, you know, burning things, trees in this case, and brush, and of course houses as well, and all the chemicals that are in that. But the key problem is these particles are so small that actually when you breathe them in, they're through our lungs, absorbed into our blood. And they can cause a bunch of problems. There's obviously the more immediate problems of like irritation, especially for people who have asthma or other kind of respiratory or pulmonary issues. So yeah, there's really a host of issues. There's research that shows emergency department or emergency room visits goes up pretty considerably during smoke events. And of course, the impacts of that are not spread equally. You know, when the fires hit Willamette Valley, you know, public health officials were virtually unanimous in their feedback of basically saying, like, or in their advice saying, stay out of the smoke, do whatever you can to avoid it. But of course, not everybody can.
Yeah, like your article says, there are hundreds of thousands of Oregonians who are not in a position to be able to follow these guidelines. So who are these folks?
Yeah, so the two big groups are farm workers and construction workers. So farm workers, there's about, and estimates vary pretty considerably, but some that I've seen from the state are about 175,000 people who work as farm workers. Construction workers, I've seen estimates about 125,000. But in addition to them, there's tens of thousands of landscapers, food vendors, biologists, railroad workers, roofers, and then kind of every different kind of delivery worker, whether that's, you know, Uber Eats, Amazon, a letter carrier. And it kind of in short, it's basically everybody we need to keep the world working. Those are the folks who really have to stay working. I should also add, there's about 16 or 17,000 homeless folks who are experiencing unsheltered homelessness in Oregon. There's obviously, you know, many, many more people experiencing different types of homelessness, you know, but that's specifically unsheltered homelessness. And so those folks are out in the smoke continually. Street Roots partnered with PSU years back to talk about the impacts of the really horrible 2020 wildfires on the region and on people experiencing unsheltered homelessness then. And, you know, we really saw some pretty dramatic impacts. on their health. So yeah, there's truly hundreds of thousands of people, and some of the most essential people to keep the world running are stuck out in the smoke, completely unable to follow kind of health guidelines.
We heard about some of the technical health impacts of smoke earlier, but how have the people that you spoke with been experiencing the health impacts of the smoke?
Yeah, so I mean, when we were kind of in the peak of the smoke, I spent a little bit of time out driving around talking to people out in the smoke. And you know, I talked to one Amazon driver. He also does, you know, DoorDash and all these other kind of gig economy jobs. His name was Carlos. He's 58 years old, but he was out delivering Amazon packages. And I was like, you know, how are you doing? And he was basically like, you know, I'm more tired than usual. Maybe I'm not getting enough oxygen. And he didn't even have any that he discussed any kind of chronic health conditions that can really exacerbate this stuff and make it worse. So kind of on the light end, you can have things like exhaustion, difficulty breathing, sore throat, headaches, migraine. But in addition to talking to folks out there on the street, I also talked to leader kind of labor leaders around Oregon. And I heard stories from the director of Oregon's Farm Workers Union that, you know, some folks were like vomiting out of like just throwing up because of the impacts of the smoke. And then just of course getting back to work, because when you work in farm work, you know, you're often paid by the piece, and it's extremely, extremely hard work, some of the hardest work in the US. And so, you know, folks would just have these really pretty worrying symptoms and then have to get back to work. And that, of course, is exacerbated by the fact that ICE and their really aggressive attacks on folks earlier this year has already taken a lot of work days from people. And then, of course, you know, everybody's feeling the impacts of inflation and things like that. And then on the really severe end, you know, this stuff does kill people. You know, heat, especially when combined with smoke. Back in 2021, a man named Sebastian Francisco Perez died of heat exhaustion while he was laying irrigation pipes at a tree farm in the Willamette Valley. It was about 114 degrees at the time, and he died. And so you can also see cases like that in this type of thing. I should point out heat, one thing that isn't in the story but should actually be mentioned is according to the National Weather Service, heat events are actually the most deadly natural disasters in the United States. Like, they kill the most people every year. And it's kind of a silent unknown killer. You know, I think when a lot of people think of heat, they just think of, you know, kids at a splash pad. And not of, you know, farm workers and other folks. And of course, you know, older Americans and older folks are especially susceptible too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the general trend is that these heat spells and these fires are only getting worse year by year. Is that right?
Yeah, so I've talked to some climatologists about this, both locally and folks that actually they're professional meteorologists. But they work for commodity traders, who, you know, investors of course rely on these things. And folks have been pretty much uniform across the board. You know, Oregon, the Pacific Northwest, we will be seeing hotter and drier summers. And kind of compounding those impacts, we're also going to be seeing more of our precipitation come in the form of rain rather than snow. Which means the end of our summers are going to be even drier, as the snowpack has already melted off. So, you know, these problems are only getting worse. A 2025, I think it was December, it came out, Oregon Department of Environmental Quality study found virtually every region of Oregon has seen an increase in wildfires and smoke over the last decade. I should say almost every region of Oregon. So you know, this is not a problem that's going anywhere, and in fact it's set to get much worse.
So you say that labor leaders, you say in your article that labor leaders are saying that protections in Oregon are already more advanced than many other states, but they need a lot of work still. What are some protections that workers already have in Oregon?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a kind of trite thing in reporting to say, you know, we've got some great laws, but we need some more. But what that really means in practice is like the laws we have protections for heat and smoke and some kind of limited labor protections. So on the heat front, back in 2022, Oregon OSHA announced new rules for heat, and they basically, I mean, these are going to strike people as astoundingly basic, as they should, I would say. They mandate employers to provide workers kind of heat illness prevention rest breaks, shade, and cool water. Which, you know, and I should point out too, this was the result of pretty significant lobbying by the Oregon Farm Workers Union that took to get these protections. Similarly, there's rules for wildfire smoke from a similar era. Those require Oregon employers to monitor air quality and then provide workers with kind of basically like COVID mask style masks when air quality thresholds are reached. I will point out those thresholds are astoundingly high, and were actually raised somewhat recently even further. So it's you know, some folks would consider it a pretty low bar. And then in 2023, the state passed a law protecting workers' right to refuse dangerous work without reprisals. So those are some of the laws we have in place. However, the problem labor leaders told me is that, I mean, I suppose this should be predictable given like, you know, some of the most powerful kind of employer interest groups in the region fought these laws and fought overtime laws and other kind of worker kind of protections, but they're not being followed. A lot of these laws, is what folks told me. You know, they're seeing a lot of cases where employers just are not following them. Workers don't know about it. And kind of compounding that impact, you know, Reyna Lopez, the director of the Oregon Farm Workers Union, told me like folks currently can't actually report violations because there just is reprisals. That's just the way it is, she explained. Like where things are right now, folks are fired when they report things. And there's a lot of leverage that employers have against workers right now. I mean, there's ICE, which is extremely motivated to deport people, especially, you know, people who are kind of pursuing worker power. But then beyond that, there's just the economic situation. Folks just need the money, more than ever. Maybe not more than ever, but certainly, you know, worse than in recent years, even. So basically, we've got some protections, but they're only going so far. And so the labor leaders I talked to really talked about the need for increased protections, especially for the most vulnerable workers, where employers really have an immense amount of leverage over them, to basically extort them and risk their lives.
So, what are some of these potential laws and protections that folks are really trying to get passed right now?
Yeah, so I talked to the leader of a roofers union around in kind of the Oregon area and Portland area, and he basically said, I mean, first off, you know, anybody who's had to wear a mask all day doing extremely hard physical labor under the sun will tell you like that's not the most sustainable long-term solution. Like ultimately, workers know what is working for their body and what isn't, and so he said he'd like to see Oregon basically shut down work or at least give workers more flexibility on days when there's really bad smoke, like a smoke threshold. And that flexibility could take the shape of things like a 6-hour workday rather than 8, or, you know, often folks in construction are working dawn to dusk. And so just giving folks a little more protection. Talk to a construction union leader in Oregon. And he said he basically wants to, I mean, first off, ensure employers are actually following the law. But he also said that the state needs to come up with an air quality threshold for when workers get something like hazard pay. And then finally, you know, Lopez at the Oregon Farm Workers Union, one thing they said, really what we need first and foremost, like those things are amazing. But what we really need is a just cause law to protect farm workers from reprisals. Because, like, as I mentioned, right now, folks are just fired for speaking up, is what I've been told, and what they've said. So basically, that's their big legislative priority in the coming session. down in Salem. So we'll see, what gets momentum and what doesn't. Obviously, employers and their interest groups certainly have a lot of sway as well. So.
I think it's also worth mentioning that the same people who are withholding these workers' rights, the people who are own these corporations and whatnot, are often also the people contributing to the climate crisis and the deepening of these heat waves. And I don't know, I feel like that is worth noting as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the research I'm sure obviously listeners just know, but yeah, the research is pretty clear, humans are causing climate change. And I guess one note I should point out too is, this year, and more than anything next year are expected to be really, really brutal as far as weather goes. And a lot of that's because of El Nino. And so, these things, while there are, of course, fluctuations in the climate year over year, decade over decade, because of things like that, like we are the driving force. And when I say we, really, I mean our choice for fossil fuels, and really maybe even more than that, just kind of global consumption and American consumption, first world consumption at the scale we are, is really what's driving these problems and what's making them worse. The Wall Street Journal, or it might have been the Daily, one of their news podcasts recently had a great episode about why the current El Niño is so bad and why weather will be so bad next year. I believe it was actually the Daily. Rare Street Roots Daily plug. But nevertheless, what we see in our worst case scenario, El Nino, next year is what we're actually going to see every year, even in kind of the average year in 2030, 2035, 2036 is what they're talking about climate protection projections showing. So, I mean, this is a crisis that's happening every day, and it's not a future crisis. And of course, it's a human crisis as well. These types of things have direct impacts on people's lives. Again, heat being, the most deadly natural disaster that we see. And it's yeah, I'll leave it there.
Yeah. Once again, pretty grim here. Nonetheless, thanks for the reporting. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
I think one thing, not to kind of shine excrement of a situation, but one thing labor leaders told me is, they see workers themselves actually organizing and educating each other on what protections we have and folks building power. I mean, obviously, the state and kind of governing bodies, it's their responsibility to create, policies and laws that protect workers. But I would say people aren't really passive in these things, whatever it might be.
How can people get their hands on a copy of this article?
Yeah, that's a great question. So of course you can read it online at Schroots.org, and that's a fine option. But there are other options. For instance, if you go to streetroots.org and scroll down a little bit, on the right side of the screen, you'll see a map titled Find a Vendor. And that'll tell you where vendors are and often when they're there. So that's a great tool. And that helps you get the print copy, which not only, you get to read about this article and some other really good ones in this issue, but it also, of course, supports people experiencing homelessness economically. Of course, the papers are a dollar. You can pay as much as you want. There is no ceiling on that. 100% of the profits from the papers goes to the vendor, so everything you give them goes to them. And you can also pay via Venmo if you just kind of want to insert tech into things somehow.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Henry.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
X-Ray FM, you're listening to Street Roots Radio. I'm Hannah Francis.